Thank you, Ryan. Totally appreciate it. I got to tell you, Bill, it's kind of like a special episode of the Bill and Wendy Show
today.
Very
special episode today, yeah.
We had Deanna Adler on, who's talking about her son, Stephen Adler, his battles with drugs and alcohol, and her book, Sweet Child of Mine. And then coming up in our streaming hour, we have Tim Ryan, a man in recovery, mm-hmm. who really helps, again, with addiction. And he's got a new book out. So
right.
we're going to. And now we have our friend and clinical psychologist and life coach and author, John Duffy, Dr. John Duffy, in the studio. It's like a special must listen, yeah. Bill and Wendy,
yeah.
today.
Well, mental wellness happy hour.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
It was interesting listening to Deanna Adler talking about a rock and roll son not wanting to reveal that he has a drug problem, because if we as parents, you know, we may say to our friends, yeah, so-and-so, my son, my daughter has a drug problem. But she said the whole world would know, and she was embarrassed to admit it.
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot, and you can only imagine the scale on which she has to address all of this, right? So in a way, she's showing such courage and such bravery in just being out there. And frankly, her son is as well, by saying, hey, Mom, you go and you talk about these things and talk about Al-Anon and how it helps you and touch these people's lives. I'm not going to be a part of it, but you know, just giving her permission says, okay, let's take the stigma off of all of this and talk about it. And I give them both a whole lot of credit for being
too.
Willing to do that. Yeah.
I know that it doesn't matter what profession is involved. Her son is a rock star. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth.
Right.
But I always wonder, in a case like that, if you're her, do you try to talk to other mothers who are in a similar position? I mean, anyone whose son or daughter is involved in drugs, they have that in common. But I wonder if she had reached out to the other mothers in the band and said, hey, we have a similar problem. Let's get together. Would that help, do you think?
You know, it's interesting what one people will say like addiction and mental illness are the great equalizers in life. So
yeah.
You might have somebody who's a rock star and somebody who is driving Uber and somebody who's a CEO, and they're all attending the same meeting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And suddenly everybody's just a human being who is going through something. So I don't know that it's necessary to have people who are like you in your group or in your meeting in order to really have, effective movement.
Sure.
Sometimes I think it's useful to just feel like a regular guy.
Oh, yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
And I have to say, off the air, Deanna kept saying, I just want to get together with a bunch of mothers and let them know that it's okay if your son or daughter uses drugs. Just admit it and love them and support them.
Yeah.
And know it's not your fault.
Yeah. Well, know it's not your fault is a big part of it, right? That's why I love to hear her talk about Al-Anon, you know, which is this deeply supportive group for families and more mothers, let's face it, you know, attend this stuff than anybody else. And they get that vibe. They get that feeling from each other and that enormous support from each other. This isn't your fault. And the key for you is to take care of yourself and be available for them when they're ready, you know, because you can't prompt that moment when they're ready to get help.
At what point, though, John, do you say, because the message that she kept giving out is, I wanted him to know that we're behind him. I'm not giving up on him. I'm here when he needs me and stuff like that. But a lot of parents have said at some point you have to go the other route and just say, now it's tough love time. I can't keep doing this.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hurting me too much to keep doing this. How do you know when that time has come, if at all?
You know, both approaches have the best of intentions underneath them, right?
Yeah.
I want my child to get better. I think sometimes the tough love approach, especially if it comes early in the game, feels just like abject rejection. And I'm out here
I could never
alone.
Do it. Yeah. Sorry.
That's the other thing is I think the vast majority of parents I've talked to and maybe lightly suggested that to said, well, I could sign up for it for a couple of hours and then I'm going to be on the phone asking, are you under the viaduct or are you okay?
Right.
You know, I think there's this instinct that tells us I want to be there. I want to be supportive all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tim Ryan, who we'll talk to on the stream, he says sometimes it comes down to tough love or you're dead.
Well, it's kind of like the life preserver. You know, if you know that your child is drowning and is going to take you with him, then you've got to say at some point, I love you. I would do anything for you, but this I can't fix. And so I'm getting out of the water, you know, and I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to do at some point. And it sometimes sends the message to the addict that, hey, things are grave enough where I have to step out because you're giving me no options. I have no idea what to do to help you.
All right, these are all pretty heavy things, and we're going to continue that with Tim Ryan. So, conversely,
do you have cupcakes at some point during the show, Wendy, just a cupcake to make things
for a mood cleanser.
Please, is it possible at some point? All right,
all right. Yeah. On. So, like, you know, how do we get ourselves happier? Can we take a break and come back and try and figure out how to deal with
Absolutely.
All this and make ourselves happier in life?
We will make that happen.
All right, that's coming up next. Stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is here because it's the 22nd. That's the reason we had him in, just to prove Wendy right. Something a little bit happier, John. Just a little bit happier.
Let's see if we can't lighten the mood
a
little bit.
Yes, just a little.
So I had the good fortune of spending some time overseas in the last couple of weeks, and I realized there are some lifestyle lessons that we can learn from other cultures, which seems so evident and obvious. And yet when you're there and you see how people live, I happen to be in Ireland, but mm-hmm. I've spent some time overseas in the past. And you feel this slower pace of life kind of across the board where people stop in the street and greet one another and greet you as strangers. And there's less looking at phones. And when I describe my lifestyle about how much I work and, you know, they're like, why would you do that to yourself? You know? And so I don't know that we need to pick up every cue from every European nation that kind of has siestas and really values like the face-to-face relationship, but there was something profound about it because as I came back, I realized, oh, I'm so much more relaxed than I was when I left, you know, and I realized so few things are urgent and, you know, that human connection was so valuable to me and is so valuable to them and you can feel it that I thought it might be worth just talking about because everything is so moderate there, eating and drinking and time on screens. And what they seem to value most is just human connection. And it was really something to witness now once again that this slower and not wildly slower, you know, everyone's making a living and things, but this slower pace of life that, you know, right. where you take a moment to kind of smell the roses, for lack of a better.
All right. So how did most of the United States fall into the trap of the high pressure, no downtime lifestyle? And do you think it's possible for us to ever get it back?
I don't think we can get it back completely. I think there's something about the American way, you know, that goes back 250 years where we're scrappy and we're hardworking. And, you know, and I don't know that.
And we like to buy stuff.
We like stuff.
We work hard. We like stuff.
Yeah, we like stuff. And that isn't always the case. If you look around most of Europe, for example, you're going to see smaller houses, little tiny cars that just a couple of people can fit in, you know, and people buy their groceries, you know, on the way home from work. Costco is not a thing there. So we like our stuff. You're right. And I don't know that all that has to change dramatically. And I think part of that is the American way and why we're so successful. And I think we're admired in many ways throughout the world for having that kind of hard work ethic. But I think there's something to be gained from slowing down every once in a while, a few times a day, taking a few breaths, connecting with somebody you might not otherwise connect with, putting the screen down for a while, you know, and changing a few habits, you know, protecting time to take a walk, to eat something healthy as opposed to something that's just on the run. One thing I noticed is people enjoy their food there. And I found myself marveling at that. Like, well, I think of food as sustenance toward the next thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And these people actually, food is the destination. That's the point, you know?
And in Italy and France, it's not uncommon for a meal to last 3 hours. Mm-hmm. That's not a strange thing at all. Here, you're complaining about the service if it's more than 45 minutes.
Right, right. And you never see that there. In fact, people will sit and linger. And it seems like there's something they deeply value about that. And curiously, I was talking to this one man who said, well, you could move here one day, but you, pointing to me, won't have any work because nobody goes to see therapists. We talk to the guy at the pub or our best friend.
But at least they're talking.
But they're talking, right? They're talking. And he said, of course, we have mental health services for people with severe mental illnesses. But for people who are a little down or depressed or something. We just talk to each other. We try to work it out together, you know, and there was something kind of heartwarming about that, you know.
But they don't do that too much here, and I'm not going to blame it on a man-woman thing, but women tend to open up to their friends more than men open up to their friends about personal problems with their lives or their family lives.
It's a big tangent, but an important one. I think there's a lot that our gender can learn from yours about connecting with each other and being more open man to man, because women are emotionally, I think, arguably far more healthy in America than men are.
And the American way is it's a pride thing. My family's fine. And that might be different if they're getting together at a pub in Ireland to discuss, oh, my old lady was driving me nuts last night. Right. You know, but here it's like, oh, everything's great.
Oh, yeah, right. There's this transparency there. Like, I talked to one man whose son had been in rehab, not unlike your previous guest. Perfectly happy to talk about that. Perfectly happy to talk about the ups and downs of the process. Whereas I think we are far more cloistered and held in and repressed about these things. And I think that's unhealthy. And just to be open and talk about your life in reality, not presenting some facade, but talking about your life in reality, really takes some of the burden off of our day-to-day lives that is so handy for us if we would just take advantage of it.
Aren't you surprised sometimes, like, when you open up your heart to someone and bare your soul, and then they say, oh, my God, I'm going through that, too? Because you do think, I'm the only one with these issues.
Right, right. Well, one thing you learn when you do a job like mine is that everybody is suffering something. You know, everybody. You know, and the envy of the neighbors with the perfect house and the allegedly perfect kids is folly, you know, because nobody's perfect. And perfection, if it existed, would be overrated anyway, right? I mean, what we're going to remember about our lives with our families are the imperfections. You know, this is the good stuff. So I think we lose track of that sometime in trying to create perfection.
Yeah.
Think about when you hear these stories, and Bill, we've read them. When people are on their deathbed, they think back to the times they spent with family, not how big their TV was.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Nobody died thinking, I want to spend more time at the office. Shoot.
Go back to the screens angle on this for just a little bit. It's getting worse instead of better, isn't it? If you're on a train or a bus or just anywhere waiting for anything, the old days of people just having a casual conversation with somebody that they didn't know, like if Forrest Gump happened today, he wouldn't be talking to that lady at the bus station. He'd be texting and she'd be playing a video game. That's really sad. Will that ever be fixed? Will there ever be a time where you could just go up to a stranger and go, hey, how about those Cubs, without going, hey, what's wrong with that guy? Why is he talking to me?
I like to think there's a backlash happening. You know, I happen to be with a lot of students who were studying abroad, and it was interesting to watch them talk to people and connect with people with their phones in their pockets, you know? So sometimes I wish that more young people had exposure to other cultures so they could feel what it was like to not be married to that device, whatever it is, you know, and to actually make eye contact with somebody and connect with them and recognize how rewarding that is because a lot of them never grew up knowing that, you know, and so to watch them learn it in real time is a bit of a revelation. So my hope is that you're right and that we have a backlash to all the social media and all the screens and that the next generation goes back to kind of a more human connection.
Yep.
You know, just last night, my friend John was at our house. He's an attorney and a yogi. He's a very interesting dude. And he said, oh, yeah, I got a new phone. And I'm thinking, why is he telling me this? And I asked, why are you telling me this? And he said, I did not put Facebook on it. There's no Twitter on it. He goes, all I can get are phone calls and texts. If I want to search the web at my own convenience, I can. But he goes, I'm completely, what did he say, unchained. I'm free.
Nice.
Well, I deliberately, while I was gone, did not have a very good plan for international service. And so my phone was on for about maybe 10 minutes a day. And to have that off and to keep your head up and your eyes up and seeing like, oh, these are amazing cliffs here. And these are beautiful people walking the streets. I would have missed all that because I would have felt like, oh, I better Instagram this, you know, immediately.
The pressure's on to keep up with your social media.
Of course, right? Yeah. But But it's so much more rewarding to have that stuff just put away. So the more we do that, I think the healthier we are, without a doubt.
Can I throw your phone away, Bill? Because
yeah,
I'm sure you'd
it.
Want me
throw
to.
Throw it away. I don't need it anymore.
He really doesn't need it. Well, there are ways to slow down, although easier said than done.
Always easier said than done. And especially for our kids' generation, they were brought up in this culture. And I think it's really, really difficult to step out of that whole social media world because that is a big part of their social connection.
When you came home, you said it was no one was really plugged in there and it was a slower pace. You came back to the United States. Are you working at a slower pace or did you jump right back in?
I jumped back in. I caught myself yesterday for a while and just put it down. And it was great. I mean, it really was. So I'm going to try to make that a practice to have that phone in front of me less.
Perfect.
DrJohnDuffy.com is his website. You can get his book, The Available Parent. We'll hear about your new book when that comes out that you're working on. And his podcast, Undue Anxiety. You can find it at WGN Plus or iTunes. Dr. John Duffy, thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.
We will be back with news. And we, I think, have a moment to breathe at 11:30.
Oh, that'll be nice.
All right. Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.